Welcome, everybody, to the Sun on the Strip podcast. My name is Brock Radke. I'm the entertainment writer for the Las Vegas Sun, and I've been doing this podcast for almost a year and a half now at lasvegassun.com and on Apple Podcasts. When I started doing it, it was really just a way for me to keep people up to date on all the entertainment news on the Las Vegas Strip. I have had conversations on this podcast with some of my colleagues in the Greenspun Media Group newsroom. I've had interviews with celebrities and entertainers. I've done a lot of different things on this show, but in recent weeks, since the Strip is shut down due to the pandemic, I have been trying to spotlight new interviews with Vegas entertainers and personalities, and I'm posting two every week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Might switch it up and do something different next week. Who knows? I'm just kind of going with the flow and trying to keep Vegas entertainment on these airwaves, so to speak. But I'm having a good time, and if you're listening, I really appreciate it. And if this is your first time listening, I appreciate that as well. So today I have an interview with Ross Mollison. He is a new age impresario, the founder of Spiegel World. That company has created the hit shows Absinthe at Caesar's Palace, Opium at Cosmopolitan, and Atomic Saloon Show at Venetian. I've had a lot of great conversations with Ross in the last couple of years. He was a great guest on my former podcast, All the Vegas, that I used to do for Las Vegas Weekly magazine. And it's just really cool to talk to him. He always kind of takes you behind the scenes of how Spiegel World does what it does. And I talked to him last week. It was actually on April Fool's Day, the anniversary of the opening of Absinthe. Kind of surreal to talk to him on that crazy day. He's in New York with his family, safe and sound, and very eager to get back to Vegas and get back to business.
Well, thanks again for making some time to speak with me on this day that is more or less your, or one of your big anniversaries in Las Vegas, right?
Yeah, it's the ninth anniversary of the opening night of Absinthe on April Fool's Day, 2011. And I didn't expect to be spending it this way, but, you know, it's just part of life's rich tapestry.
That's a very positive way to look at it, I think.
Yeah. Well, we're feeling positive. You know, we've got all sorts of plans and all sorts of partnerships we've been talking about, and you know, after we got through the whole closing down of everything, you know, I got my first email saying, hey, well, you know, let's keep going on this thing. And then another one came in, let's keep doing this project. And, you know, generally everyone I'm speaking to is just like, yeah, you know, this is a nasty bump, but it's not going to stop us. We're planning what happens when we get the other side of it.
Yeah, I think Vegas in general and showbiz folks like yourself in particular have always been very innovative and talented at kind of reading the terrain, whatever that terrain may be, and making adjustments. And I think it's really exciting to see. It's going to be exciting to see what happens in that regard moving forward once we get through this thing.
It's gonna the creativity this is gonna unleash is gonna be mind blowing. You know, everybody's just got not everybody. A lot of people have the luxury of extra time right now, and they're sitting around dreaming, and they're sitting away plotting and planning and thinking. And you know, as a friend of mine, one of the world's great impresarios, David Bates, said to me last night on the phone. He said, "Look, we're carnies. We're used to being broke. We're used to having to dream something up to throw on stage and to get everybody to come and entertain them. So, you know, we'll be fine. We'll end up back on stage some point."
Mm-hmm. speaking of Absinthe, definitely a powerhouse show on the Strip in terms of the number of shows that have been happening every week, the amount of tickets you're selling, and just the, I guess, continuous buzz, you know, that this is one of those must-see Vegas experiences. When you look back at sort of the development and evolution of Absinthe, does the success, is that surprising to you? Do you still feel like kind of feel like the underdog despite this success?
Yeah, I think you've always got to feel like the underdog, because no matter how mighty you are, arrogance is the enemy of success. And we never take it for granted. We go out there every day to try and make show better, to make the environment better, to make the experience refreshed and new. You know, the greatest compliment, the thing I love the most, is when I get an email from someone saying, wow, I went back to Absinthe. You put that new act in. I haven't seen it before. It was so great. You know, I got an email from Gary Selesin, the president there, and he'd just seen our new Sway Paul act that went in 6 months ago. And I remember him saying, man, that's more than an act. That's a whole show in its own right. And, you know, that's a great compliment. That's a great pleasure to actually be coming up with new ideas, putting together new acts, putting together, like building the Absinthe Electric Oak, you know, the 120,000 leaves on that tree, and just making the environment even more surprising when you're out front of the tent. You know, little things like that really are what is fun about the whole thing. And so we're really, really glad to see it having grown so much over the course of the 9 years it's been on stage.
The millions of people that come to Las Vegas are always looking for whatever the new hot thing is. And you and Spiegelworld, you guys have been able to achieve that a few times over in these 9 years. Is that specific, like, you know, the first time audience, the word of mouth audience, is that group top of mind for you and your creative team when you're conceptualizing your shows and fine tuning your shows?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we like to think locals first and then build out of that. And as you can see with the Atomic Saloon show, you know, we really have hopefully learned something over having done, you know, four shows in Vegas now. And we premiered that at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival in Scotland, because I just knew that I wanted the locals, from the first local that walked through the door on the first day it was performed in Vegas, I wanted them to walk out and go, well, that was amazing. I love that show. So we really got the show right. We really fine-tuned it in Scotland, played there for a month. So by the time we hit Vegas at the Venetian, it was just firing. And, you know, they're our ad budget. You know, they're our word of mouth. And they go out and they tweet away and do all the different social media things and tell their friends. And everybody in Vegas has someone who comes to Vegas every year, you know, whether it's a family member or a friend. And they say, well, what are we going to do on the Strip? And they're great advertising for us, and they've been incredible support mechanism. We learned that on Absinthe. We just totally targeted locals on Absinthe. They fell in love with it, and so I regard it as our job to never disappoint them.
Well, one thing that I really love that you're doing with your shows in Vegas is there's these smaller elements of comedy and theatricality within each show, and they really keep things moving along. You know, you can't say, no one can say, oh, Opium is just Absinthe with a spacey science fiction theme, or Atomic Saloon is the same thing you guys have been doing. It just has a Wild West theme. That's oversimplification, and it's just not true. There's a lot of differences, and the cast of each show are very different kinds of performers, and they bring so much, I guess, unique talent to the stage.
Yeah, we're really blessed to have so many people who've taken the leap of faith to come to America, to come to Vegas, to work with us. And it's taken many, many years to build up such a great crew of people, but they're an amazing group of artists, and we love working with them. And, you know, if someone said, you know, Opium's just Absinthe in space, well, I'm okay with that, because Absinthe's pretty good. So, but you know, it is to my in my view, opium is just it is just rocking it now. Like it is just blisteringly great, and the audience is just leaping to their feet at the end of that show. And anyone who's been to see it before, you know that that was a difficult birth, that one, but it's firing on all cylinders now. And as is the Cosmo, and the Cosmo is such a wonderful resort. It's got a different point of view. Venetian's got a different point of view, you know. And I think the point is to try and excite and surprise your audience by giving them something different, by saying to them, well, this is what Absinthe was, and this one's a bit different. And when they come out, they go, yeah, yeah, they all fit together. I can see the same company produced them, but they all have a different vibe.
You made a comparison on – you went on KNPR last fall and made a comparison there that I really liked and I hadn't heard you really reference before, which is that Spiegelworld is sort of like Bugs Bunny compared to Cirque du Soleil being a little bit like Mickey Mouse. Can you explain that metaphor a bit?
Oh, my God. I mean, yeah. Well, yeah, I guess, you know, I mean, Mickey's a guy, right? I mean, he's got the empire. He's got, I mean, you can't criticize what he and Walt have achieved. It's been something quite phenomenal. But Bugs Bunny was always there having a crack. He was a wise guy. He was like, you know, what's up, Doc, with his carrot hanging out of his mouth, having fun the whole time. And, you know, I think, you know, there's a place for all of us in this entertainment world. We all round out this incredibly rich world. Just as, you know, I love so much of what Disney do. But I also love a lot of what other entertainment producers do. And I think there's you know, the niche we occupy. We're a niche player, effectively. You know, if we sell every seat in Vegas, I think we've got about 13,000 seats a week or something. And Cirque have got, you know, probably 10 times that amount to sell. And so, you know, 900,000 people come every week. We've got 13,000 tickets to sell. So we're not for everybody, and everybody doesn't come and see us. You know, maybe 10% of the market goes to see Cirque. So, I just think, yeah, we're kind of a more specialized thing in that regard. And that's not to say, you know, we're better or worse. We're just different.
Obviously, things are frozen in time at the moment. But I wanted to check in with you and see kind of where things left off with We Are Here, the fourth show that you have been developing in recent years, possibly for Vegas, possibly for anywhere else. What's the status of that project?
Well, we do actually have significant interest in Vegas. We've been in negotiation with a number of properties for a while now, and we haven't decided which way we're going to jump. And I think when we come out of our hiatus here, I think we are going to jump into that in a very, very quick way, because I think that. At the end of this, people are going to want to come to Vegas. This is just winding up the spring that drives the little propeller on the little plane that takes you from wherever you're sitting right now to Vegas. It's just winding tighter and tighter every day that goes by. Like, I got to get there, man. And when people get there, the spring is just going to explode when the plane takes off. Get them to Vegas, and they're going to go crazy, and they're going to want to go to the disco. You know, you're going to want to just dance it all away and forget about it and just explode with energy the way people did during that period in the 70s, you know, when it was born, in that great period where, you know, New York just went crazy with this whole new sound on the floor. And so, you know, with our music director, Nile Rodgers, and Stephen Hoggett, our director, you know, we've got a lot of plans. And but the thing is, it's got to be the right venue. It's got to be perfect. I don't want to do anything that's not perfect. And we're actually taking it to the Sydney Festival in January. I can announce that now. Because we've cancelled it. But we were going to do a month in Sydney, Australia. I'm from Australia. And Sydney in January is kind of one of the closest things to Vegas. It's like just a party. Everybody goes crazy. Nobody goes to work for the whole month. Everybody's out on the harbor, going to the opera house, just having a blast. I said, well, that's very close to Vegas. Let's go do disco in Sydney, and then once it's over at the end of January, we'll transfer it straight to Vegas. Well, when all this started going down, we had to say to the guys there, look, this is just going to be too hard, and they understood that. But, you know, we're getting very close to getting those deals done. So I think it will be coming soon. And, again, it is so much – it's so different to the other three. It's going to be fun. I can't wait. It's going to be fun.
I can't wait either for that one, and I'm looking forward to tracking it down wherever it might be and checking it out. What else would you like to say to everybody out there who's definitely missing your Vegas shows and can't wait to get back in those theaters as soon as possible?
You know, it's such a beautiful place. I saw one of the outlets there had a drone footage of the entire strip shot the other day. And the drone just went up and down the strip a few times and over the Addison tent and trees not going, and you can see the atomic billboard, and you see all the Beatles, the Love billboards on the side of Mirage. And, you know, you just go, wow, it's just such a magic place. It's just such a special place. It's such a privilege to work there and to have so many friends who live there and work there. And, you know, we have 350 staff now that work for us there. And it's just been the greatest experience of my professional life to have that opportunity to build that business and become part of that community. And we're really excited. We're really excited. And, you know, this is not – you have to keep reminding yourself that the current time is not just germane to us. It's not just germane to America. It's the entire world that is suffering through this. And we just want everybody to stay as safe as they can, get through this, because we're going to explode back on the scene in a good way. As soon as, you know, the governor and the president and whoever else has got to give approval, our resort partners, say that it's safe for our patrons and our employees to get out there. We cannot wait to get back there. And we're using this period right now to, you know, work with our development team and work with our partners and say, well, how can we make it better? You know, what can we do? What can we do while we're in this foreclosure that's going to make it better when we get back down there, and make it stronger and make it more resilient as well? So, you know, that's really fun. And, you know, I just want to send my love to everyone in Vegas. And I can't wait to get back there. I have a reservation. They haven't canceled it yet. I know they're going to. I have a reservation at Nobu on April 17, which is the first day they're open. And I always stay in the same suite at Nobu. I love it there. If I'm not staying at the Venetian or Cosmopolitan, which I also love. But They were the first to say they were having it. I think the governor's just announced it's going to be pushed back. But, you know, as soon as I can, as soon as we're on, we're down there, we're back on stage.
Thanks again for listening to The Sun on the Strip. You can catch past episodes and interviews at lasvegassun.com/podcasts and at Apple Podcasts. Of course, go to lasvegassun.com to stay up to date on everything that's happening in Las Vegas these days. And you can also read every week's issue of Las Vegas Weekly magazine at lasvegasweekly.com. Have a great week.